Hello, everybody, and welcome to Rounding Third Sports. I'm your host, Steve, and we are going to jump right into this new episode of the podcast. We're going to start today talking about the NFL. And as everybody knows, we just recently had over the weekend the NFL honors. So the Hall of Fame and all of the year-end awards were given out. So quickly, we're going to talk about the Hall of Fame, and then we will talk about the rest of the awards that were given out over this past weekend. So as we have seen, the players that were chosen for the Hall of Fame, Calvin Johnson, Detroit Lions wide receiver, Peyton Manning, everybody knows, the Indianapolis Colts, Denver Broncos, Super Bowl winning quarterback, and defensive back Charles Woodson. Those are the big names that came out of this year's Hall of Fame class. And those are the names that everybody is talking about right now. So obviously, all three well-deserving players, well-deserving members of the Hall of Fame to get that nod and get enshrined. But the names I want to look at are the names that did not get chosen this year. And there are some big names for someone like me, that grew up watching a lot of these players that are now eligible for the Hall of Fame, seeing them now reaching the level of being talked about and being finalists for the modern era of the Hall of Fame. So these are guys that, for some of them, I think they will eventually be Hall of Famers. Obviously not this year, but in the coming years, I could see some of these getting that vote. So number one, first off, is Jared Allen. This is in no particular order. Let me say that. But some names that were finalists this year. So Jared Allen, defensive end, spent a few years with the Chiefs, a good amount of his career with the Minnesota Vikings, and then a couple years with the Bears and a year with the Panthers. So everybody remembers Jared Allen from his time with the Chiefs and his time with the Vikings. The other two teams he spent the latter part of his career with not really putting up those Hall of Fame numbers. But I think his time with the Chiefs and the Vikings, his playoff runs, and just the stats that he was able to put up, he will, in my opinion, eventually get that nod, get that vote for becoming a Hall of Famer. The next player is Rondé Barber. So cornerback and safety from the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. He was with them for 15, 16 seasons, something right around there. Part of the Super Bowl winning Tampa Bay Buccaneers team. Not obviously this recent Tampa Bay Bucs team, but the first Super Bowl they had. A big part of that defense that we all remember. So Rondé Barber, I think he eventually gets it. If for nothing else, that Super Bowl winning year where they had that really dominant defense. As I'm looking down here, some other names that I recognize: Torrey Holt, wide receiver from the Rams, spent a year with the Jaguars as well, right at the end of his career. Good statistics. He's one of those I think is a borderline Hall of Famer. So I don't know that Torrey Holt really had that year that really grabs your attention. Obviously, he was part of those Rams teams that made the playoffs, the Rams team that went to the Super Bowl. But I don't think he has that standout performance like that we would expect from a Hall of Famer. Now, I will say he at least does have a Super Bowl appearance to his name. That's something that Calvin Johnson does not. But when you think of Calvin Johnson, you think of Megatron. You think of those outstanding catches and just how dominant he was as a wide receiver. With Torrey Holt, we remember the Super Bowl, but he isn't even the name you really remember that. When I think of the Super Bowl Rams, I think of Kurt Warner, I think of Marshall Faulk, Isaac Bruce. You know, those are the names that come to my head first. Torrey Holt is one that's further down that list. So in my opinion, Torrey Holt is a borderline Hall of Famer. I could see it going either way. Going down through here, Richard Seymour, I think he is a shoe-in for the Hall of Fame, being a part of several of those New England Patriots Super Bowl teams, a dominant defensive end, defensive tackle, Reggie Wayne, 14 seasons with the Indianapolis Colts, was always overshadowed for a good majority of his career, playing alongside not only Peyton Manning as your quarterback, but Marvin Harrison as the number one wide receiver. So without Marvin Harrison, Reggie Wayne, I think, would be a shoe-in, easy pick Hall of Famer. Because of the fact that he was relegated to wide receiver two for the majority of his career, I think he still makes it, but I don't think it's as easy of a decision as it would have been had he been wide receiver one. So those are the names from this season. This was Torrey Holt's second time as a finalist. Rondae Barber and Jared Allen, their first time as finalists. And Richard Seymour's third time, Reggie Wayne's second time. So most of them appearing multiple times on here. All of them, except for Torrey Holt, have been eligible for 4 years or less. So Torrey Holt has been seven. This is his seventh year in eligibility. So he's getting up there and running out of opportunities, whereas these other guys, you know, are all somewhat newer to the finalist list and being eligible as Hall of Famers. So transitioning over to this year's awards, so 2021, I guess, but it'd be the 2020 season. Obviously, we know our MVP selection was Aaron Rodgers, quarterback from Green Bay Packers, and he did put up some great stats this year. He set career high marks in touchdowns at 48, passer rating, QBR, adjusted net yards per attempt, completion percentage. He set records for himself. He set career marks. So I think that was a pretty easy choice for MVP. Other players that were considered, Patrick Mahomes, obviously, going to the Super Bowl. I know this was decided before the Super Bowl, but even after the Super Bowl, I don't think that would have helped Mahomes' case at all. And Josh Allen was the other one in contention, really, for the MVP award. Buffalo Bills quarterback, made it the AFC Championship, but made a huge step forward as a passer this year. I don't think this will be the last time we hear Josh Allen's name in conversations about MVP. He's doing great things up there in Buffalo. I think they're really going to focus in on the draft this year and free agency and get him more of those positions that are necessary, the positions that they need help with. And I think we'll see him back on this list for sure. AP Offensive Player of the Year, Derrick Henry. I mean, how can you not vote for this guy? This guy is the definition of a beast at a running back. I've been seeing pictures floating around of him and Mark Ingram back in their Alabama days. And I don't know if they're photoshopped or not. I don't think they are. But this guy is gigantic. And just imagining trying to tackle him as a defender has to make anybody nervous. But this season became just the eighth running back to eclipse the 2,000-yard mark. So obviously a huge year for him. And doing other just outstanding things, 17 touchdowns, averaged over 125 yards a game, all career highs for him. So this is no shock. Other names that were in consideration, obviously Aaron Rodgers being the MVP, Stephon Diggs, Travis Kelce. Even looking at those three names and seeing what they did this season, I don't see how you go any other direction than Derrick Henry. Defensive Player of the Year. I think this is probably one of the more talked about awards this season because it was a lot more contested than you would think. And you see the name of who won, Aaron Donald from the Rams, and instantly you're like, oh, that's an obvious choice. It's kind of like a few years ago thinking about Von Miller. It was an easy choice. But honestly, I don't know if they got this right this year. Now, not taking away from what Aaron Donald did this year, 13 and a half sacks, 14 tackles for loss, 45 total tackles. I mean, those are good stats. That's an impressive season. But when you look at what TJ Watt did for the Steelers, 15 sacks, 23 tackles for a loss, which were career high numbers. Not saying that Aaron Donald didn't deserve it in his own right, but in my opinion, TJ Watt would have been the better choice here. It would have made more sense. So do I agree with the choice? Do I like the choice? Aaron Donald, a good defensive player. I mean, really, he's worthy any year of the Defensive Player of the Year award. This year, I just think TJ Watt was more deserving. Offensive Rookie of the Year, Justin Herbert, quarterback from the Chargers. This one really wasn't much of a debate. I know people mentioned Justin Jefferson from the Vikings. I just don't think you can really compare it to what Herbert did for the Chargers. Now, I hear a lot of people saying there's two debates I've heard a lot of. What if Joe Burrow played a full season, one, and should the Bengals have taken Herbert number one overall? And I'm going to address both of those right now. For the first one, what if Joe Burrow had played a full season? You can't play the what if game with awards because there's really no way of knowing. With the offensive line that Burrow had, I don't know that he could have put up the numbers that Herbert put up. Not this year. Not in year one. He definitely would have been in consideration, but I just don't think you could take away from what Justin Herbert did. As far as the second question, should the Bengals have taken Justin Herbert? Again, that's one you really can't give an answer to, because it revolves around the Bengals' offensive line. I don't think any quarterback could have thrived with the offensive line that the Bengals had, whether it's Joe Burrow, whether it's Justin Herbert, whether it's anybody else, Andy Dalton even. None of them would have succeeded at quarterback because the Bengals' offensive line was so horrendous. You can't do it. It's not possible. The Bengals, I know they're talking about drafting wide receivers, but in all honesty, the Bengals need to focus on offensive linemen to protect Joe Burrow, especially now that he has this significant injury. I could see Joe Burrow playing more cautiously next season or whenever he returns, and that could be detrimental to his play style. But if he does not have an offensive line, his career is going to go down very quickly. So that is how I'm going to address those two questions. Justin Herbert, in my opinion, the clear winner, the easy pick for Rookie of the Year offense. Defense, again, easy pick. Chase Young, defensive end for, I always want to call them the Redskins, the Washington football team. 7.5 sacks, 44 tackles, 10 of which were for a loss, 12 quarterback hits, recovered 3 fumbles, including returning 1 for a touchdown. As a rookie, that is outstanding. On a team in the NFC East, that is outstanding. That is dominant. He's already, as a rookie, drawing double teams, which we saw a lot of times last season with the Buckeyes, drawing double teams. But he's already seeing that in the NFL where they're starting to double team him, similar to what they do for Aaron Donald. I see Chase Young being a force to be reckoned with in years to come. I see him being in contention for Defensive Player of the Year for years to come. And also, let me just brag a little bit here about that's 4 out of the 5 last Defensive Rookie of the Year coming from the Ohio State University. Obviously, Chase Young, Nick Bosa. There was a year in between where there was somebody else. And then you have Marshawn Lattimore and you have Joey Bosa. So dominant defensive rookies coming out of the Ohio State University. So, of course, after last season, we're looking for that next dominant guy. Man of the Year Award, Walter Payton Man of the Year Award, Travis Kelce, a good guy, does a lot of work outside, you know, off the field. I mean, you can go through and look at all the foundations that he's a part of, everything he helps do, just an outstanding man. So well-deserving here. And actually that's not, I don't think that's correct. I don't think he won it. Now that I'm thinking about it, I think this is wrong. That is wrong. Russell Wilson actually won. That's my bad. Russell Wilson actually won the Walter Payton Man of the Year Award. And again, you can go through and look at what he's done as well. He has the Why Not You Foundation that earned him the humanitarian honor, among other things he does for the community. So yes, that's Russell Wilson that won the Man of the Year Award, not Travis Kelce. Coach of the Year, Kevin Stefanski. Obviously, the Browns had a really big turnaround this year with what they did on the field. So that one makes sense. It does not surprise me. It is what it is. You know, Kevin Stefanski did an amazing job with the Cleveland Browns. And the last award I want to talk about is the Comeback Player of the Year Award. And something I saw posted on Facebook the other day, from a friend, and I know this wasn't his original thought. He even acknowledged that he got it from somebody else, but they need to rename, or I guess they need to name it. They don't even have a name on this award. It's just the Comeback Player of the Year. They need to name this award after this year's winner being Alex Smith, the quarterback from Washington. And I'm going to try to pull up, that social media post because it was, I mean, it was right on talking about what he went through and the fact that he came back and won this year. So Alex Smith, comeback player of the year. He was told he might die due to complications with his leg injury. He was told his leg might be amputated. He was told he would never walk again. Alex Smith went through 17 surgeries, and after 693 days, Alex Smith made his return to the Washington football team as quarterback. Not only did he return, but Alex Smith helped lead Washington to an NFC East title. That is worthy of having your name on that trophy as the, whatever you want to call it, named after you. But it needs to be called going forward the Alex Smith Comeback Player of the Year Award. This is remarkable. I don't think there will ever be another story like Alex Smith's. Going from a gruesome leg injury, almost losing your life, almost losing your leg, you know, over a dozen surgeries, and come back and still play the game that you love. That is amazing. He finished the season completing 66.7% of his touchdowns, a 6-8 TD to interception ratio, but that isn't even an issue because you look at who Washington has. I mean, just the fact that he's able to put up numbers is outstanding. So, yeah, NFL. Roger Goodell, you need to do this, man. This needs to be, you know, NFL Players Association. The name of the award for the Comeback Player of the Year needs to be the Alex Smith Comeback Player of the Year Award. All right, last thing, I guess second to last thing we're going to talk about regarding NFL, and then we'll move on to another sport. Real quick, we'll go over the Super Bowl. I'm not going to linger here. We watched it. We saw it. The Buccaneers really demolished the Kansas City Chiefs. This game wasn't even close. The Chiefs couldn't even score a touchdown. And it amazes me. You know, I talked last episode about the QB pressure. And it looked like it wasn't even real. Like, that's those stats that I gave last week, it looks like that was all made up. if you look at this game. I mean, these players on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers came to play. But just going through here real quick, a few stats. Mahomes, 270 yards, two interceptions. Tom Brady, 201 yards, three touchdowns. Leonard Fournette, 89 yards, a touchdown. Gronkowski, 67 yards, two touchdowns. Just outstanding work by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Whether I'm a fan or not of Tom Brady, this was excellent work. And we could talk about the penalties and all of that. But even without that, 31-9, I mean, you can't even score a touchdown. That's there's nothing really to knock here. Possession time, it wasn't even like Tampa Bay possessed the ball longer. It was about 3 minute time difference. So move on to next year. And we'll go again. We'll see who performs next year. But there's a lot of stuff that's going to be coming in this offseason. This is going to be a big, we could see a lot of changes this year, whether it be players moving, whether we see rules, but you know, there's things like a 17 game season. You know, that's going to be something they're really pushing for this year. I could see by next season us having a 17 game season. They have to figure out the preseason, what they're going to do, how it's going to work. You know, we have the draft coming up here at the end of April, and it's going to be in Cleveland. Is it going to be live? Is it going to be virtual? You know, how's that all going to work? There's still a lot of stuff that has to be worked out for that. And then we have all these quarterbacks that are looking to move, or we have teams that need quarterbacks. You know, obviously we've already seen the Stafford trade with Jared Goff. There's talk of trades involving Carson Wentz, Deshaun Watson, and among others. There's just a lot of stuff happening. Ben Roethlisberger, you know, if he's going to return, he has to renegotiate a contract. Aaron Rodgers. Now, is it realistic that either of them move? No, but I could see it. You know, it is a possibility. But we also have teams that are looking to replace their starter from this year. You know, we have the Bears, the 49ers, the Panthers, the Patriots, the Colts, the Jaguars, the Jets, the Saints, the Broncos, and the Washington football team all looking to potentially replace their starters from last year. You know, none of those teams have a lock for their quarterback this year, or a dominant quarterback in that position. Two of the teams affected by retirements or potential retirements, and then just a lot of uncertainty. Salary cap number still has to be decided on, so you know that's going to create issues for teams. Free agency. This is going to be the year of the wide receiver, folks. This draft has a bunch of top tier wide receivers coming out, as well as free agency. You've got guys like Kenny Golladay, Allen Robinson, Chris Godwin, who just won a Super Bowl, Corey Davis, A.J. Green, Juju, Curtis Samuel, Will Fuller. All these guys are looking to sign new contracts. And then I'd say something that really needs to be focused on, and there's other rules and things that are going to be decided on, but can we please get a team name for the Washington football team? Can we please stop calling them the Washington football team or the WFT? Can we just come up with a name already? Like, that blew my mind when they announced that they were going to go forward as the Washington football team. Like, what are you doing? Come up with it. There are plenty. You're telling me out of all the names and all the words out there, you can't come up with a name for your football team. That is amazing. That is crazy. Their executives need to sit down in a room, talk it out, and decide on a team name. Because at this point, anything is better than the Washington football team. All right, stick around. I'm going to take a quick break. We will be right back and we will discuss Major League Baseball. We're going to talk a little bit about some rule changes or potential rule changes. And then we're going to really jump into college basketball. So obviously we're gearing up. We are a month away from March Madness. And there's a lot of stuff happening in college basketball this year. So we're going to talk about that next. Stay tuned. And we are back. And we are going to not waste any time here. We're going to jump right into Major League Baseball. So obviously, this is, as I mentioned last episode, baseball is one of my favorite sports. I absolutely love it. I love the atmosphere. I love going to games. I love watching games. I love collecting bobbleheads, all of that, everything that goes in it. I love eating the hot dogs and you know, getting the souvenirs. I love it. I just absolutely love the game of baseball. And I know there's not a lot of, there's a lot less people nowadays that love baseball in that way. And a lot of it has to do with the length of game. And a lot of it has to do with just the dead ball era. You know, and I know the dead ball era was a long time ago, but we've seen it kind of go back and forth. You know, I am one that grew up in the age range where we saw the home run, the home run races. You know, I lived through the season of Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa and Ken Griffey Jr. Setting records, and you know, Barry Bonds breaking that record, and not only single season, but then breaking the career home run record. And you know, we can discuss all day long about the steroids and all of that. That's for a completely separate topic. But that really brought a lot of excitement and fans to Major League Baseball. You know, the Home Run Derby was a huge hit every year. You know, watching Ken Griffey Jr. year after year participate in that and have the backwards hat and seeing all of that and watching Mark McGwire hit home runs in out of Fenway during the Home Run Derby. You know, that is what I grew up watching. And so then we go through a spurt where it's pitcher heavy. You know, you have guys like Roy Halladay, even now with Clayton Kershaw, Max Scherzer, CC Sabathia, and the list goes on. And you kind of go through an ebb and flow of, are we going to see a high home run, you know, a lot of home runs this year? Are we going to see dominant pitchers this year and not as many fly balls? Or what are we going to see? You know, low scoring games, high scoring games. That is really what it comes down to every year. What kind of excitement are we going to have? Are we going to be a hitter heavy year season, or are we going to be a pitcher heavy season? And with everything, they're working on trying to make the games shorter. You know, they've introduced the pitch clock and the inning clock and all this other stuff to try to speed up the game. And one thing they did last year, and obviously things were a lot different last year, you know, we had a pandemic and we had a much shortened season. And with that came, when there were postponements or anything like that, we would move to 7-inning doubleheaders. And that is something they are bringing back in 2021. I thought I was going to be able to flip to it pretty quickly, but I can't. But they are bringing that back. So if there is a, let me see if I can find the wording for it, because I want to say it correctly. But these are rules that were agreed upon for this year. Now, let me start by saying what was not included in these rule agreements was the designated hitter in the National League. So we're still not going to have that as of today, as of right now, nor are there going to be expanded playoffs this season. Again, as of right now, there is obviously a little over a month and a half before the season really begins. So there's time for those rules to be put in place. But as of right now, those two things are not happening. What we are going to see is the 7-inning doubleheaders, as well as if a game goes into extra innings, a runner will start on second base. So those were agreed upon. Those are things that the teams liked. To put it in perspective, they gave some stats regarding doubleheaders. Last year, there were 78 extra inning games, and the longest by innings were a pair of 13-inning games that were played at Houston, which Houston actually lost both of those. Now, every previous season since 1901 had at least one game of 15 innings or longer. So we broke that 119-year streak where 119-year streak of at least one game of 15 innings or longer. And the longest last year was 13 innings. Last year, there were 45 games that were postponed for COVID-related reasons, and only two were not made up. So this created 56 doubleheaders, which is the most since 1984. About 12% of all games were part of doubleheaders, which is the highest percentage since 1978. Now, obviously, that number is skewed because you have less games. So I don't think that is a stat they should really spend time on, but it is interesting to note. So what we will see this year is 7-inning doubleheaders when games do have to have doubleheaders. So you don't have a full day of games. You have two less innings in each game. So a total of you're losing 4 innings. And if any game goes into extra innings, a runner starts on second base, giving them easier odds to score quicker. The other topic I wanted to talk about with Major League Baseball, and this is one that is near and dear to my heart because it's a collection of mine, but with a lost season meant a lot of lost giveaways. You know, there was no fans, and the big giveaway, I know it's big with the Reds, and I'm you know, I don't spend a lot of time going to other stadiums, even though I wish I did, but I'm guessing that every team probably has big bobblehead giveaways. And, you know, I sit here in this room right now and I can look up on my walls and see shelves that are full of Cincinnati Reds bobbleheads that I've collected over the years. And thankfully, I do have one that I was able to get from last season due to a giveaway they did locally at a grocery store. So last year wasn't a complete loss in terms of gaining bobbleheads, but we weren't able to experience those bobblehead games, unfortunately. So this article, though, it says 4 million extra bobbleheads, 2020's lost MLB giveaways could be a jackpot for fans. And so basically what it's saying is that with all the cancellations for games and not having fans in stadiums, there's a lot of bobbleheads that are out there and they have nowhere to go with them. So for example, the one they talked about here is the Pittsburgh Pirates with Trevor Williams. He had a Star Wars. He was part of the Star Wars bobblehead giveaway, in Pittsburgh, which was supposed to be last August. So now, you know, a year later from when the season was supposed to start, there are just cardboard boxes filled with 200 bobbleheads featuring, you know, him in a stormtrooper outfit that just arrived at his home in Phoenix. The Pirates had planned on giving away 10,000. Most of them now sit in a storage room at the ballpark. They're part of a league-wide treasure trove of unused promotional items that pose problems for teams, but could mean unprecedented freebies for fans when they return to games. So what that tells me is that teams could be doing many more bobblehead games this season, or random freebie giveaways for all of the stuff that they have from last season that they planned on giving out. And my response to that is, let's do it. I've got wall space, you know, send me your bobbleheads. I will take them. You know, that is a fun little collection that I have, that I enjoy. I love getting them. I love going to the game. You know, obviously I love going to the games and the atmosphere of the games, but just as much, I love collecting bobbleheads. I've got everything from Big Red Machine to, you know, the pinstripe years for the Reds, all the way up to the present, you know, going all the way back to, Ted Klazuski, you know, Pat Moran, Chuck Harmon, you know, all of those, all going all the way back. And, you know, so I'm looking forward to what this year might bring on in terms of bobbleheads. All right, let's move on to the final topic tonight, or final category, I guess we'll call it, which is college basketball. The first topic being the Big Ten tournament. So obviously last year, you know, we lost all of March Madness. We didn't get to experience any of it. And so this year it's exciting. As of right now, it's going forward. And the Big Ten came out this week and announced that they are actually moving their tournament from Chicago to Indianapolis. So as some of you may know, the Big Ten tournament, or I'm sorry, the NCAA tournament has already been moved to Indianapolis. The entire tournament is happening right there in Indy and surrounding areas. So to keep everything localized, not force a lot of travel, everything for the NCAA tournament is going to happen right there in Indianapolis and the surrounding communities in Indiana. So Big Ten also then, to make it easier, I'm guessing, for their teams that are going to be playing in the NCAA tournament, they moved their conference tournament from the United Center in Chicago to Lucas Oil Stadium in Indianapolis. So the dates for that, March 10th through the 14th. And then obviously following that is Selection Sunday, which then leads right into the NCAA tournament. They say multiple factors went into the decision, but the league stated that its priority is health and safety of student athletes, coaches, officials. And so hosting both the men's and the women's tournaments in the same city allows for cohesive testing and medical protocols for both events, as well as centralized accommodations surrounding the competition venues. So, and then the Big Ten tournament will return to Chicago in 2023. So there's the first announcement regarding the Big Ten and regarding conference tournaments. Obviously there's a lot of things that are going to be different about March Madness. We don't know yet what teams we're going to have. We don't know yet how big of a bracket we're going to have. Are we going to have the full 68 teams that we've had in years prior? Are we going to have, you know, a 16 team tournament? Are we going to have a 32 team tournament? Is it going to be, you know, how many teams are we going to have? 48? And we'll discuss the bracket and bracketology here in a minute. But another interesting thing to note, and I saw an update to this, but the article I have pulled up talks about the Kansas City Jayhawks dropping out of the AP Top 25 for the first time in 12 years. And that is crazy to think of, a team being ranked for 12 straight years. And I'm going to see if I can find, of course, I probably won't be able to find it now, but I saw a picture. And I believe it was the 12 or 13 winningest college basketball teams were all unranked for the first time. And of course, I can't pull it up quick enough, but I know that list includes Kentucky, Kansas, Duke, North Carolina, UCLA, Utah, the University of Cincinnati. That's seven of them. And there's six others. I can't think of them off the top of my head. But the top 13 winningest teams in college basketball were all unranked. And that's crazy. When you think of college basketball, those are who you think of. Those are who you expect to be your ones and twos and three seeds every year, year in, year out. You don't expect there to be anybody except those teams. Stanford might have been up there. I can't remember now, but I feel like I saw Stanford up there. But the 13 most winningest teams in college basketball history, all unranked at the same time. So there's a little bit of information for you to kind of chew on for a little bit, but let's move on to the final topic tonight, or this afternoon, whatever time it is you're listening. But that is bracketology, March Madness. And you know, if you follow ESPN, you follow all of that, you can see their bracketology picks and all their March Madness predictions and all of that. But this year, it's so much different because you're not only predicting the bracket at a normal 68 team, but they've even gone through and they've predicted a 48 team tournament as well as a 16 team tournament, just because there's so much uncertainty of what is going to come of the tournament this year. Are you going to have a full 68 teams all in one city? Are they going to do it? You know, obviously that brings up some issues as well, but I would hope and I would think that college basketball, the NCAA, would have some kind of contingency, some kind of backup plans regarding the pandemic, regarding testing, not just, hey, we're going to go forward with 68 teams. Are 68 teams even going to opt in? Because obviously you have teams that are going to say, you know what, I don't think it's safe for us to partake in this. And they back out. So that, again, poses issues. But looking at the bracket right now, and we're gonna break down 68, 48, and 16. At the full 68, well, first off, let me say the top overall seed across the board, all three of them, is Gonzaga. They're the clear number one right now. They are undefeated, one of two undefeated teams. The only other one being Baylor, who is currently has postponed games. They put their season on hold temporarily. So right now, Gonzaga is the overall number one seed. In terms of 68 teams, the first team out is Colorado State, and the last team in is VCU, or Virginia Commonwealth. So teams that just barely made it, Stanford, who we just talked about, UConn, Oregon. Those are your teams that are just making it in. And then you have teams like St. Louis, Colorado State, St. John's, Penn State that are just missing out on this tournament. But looking through, we'll just discuss these big teams, these big name teams we know, these winning teams, and see where it is they're seeded currently. So UCLA is currently falling down to a seven seed. Alabama has actually fallen. I know they're not a blue blood, but Alabama has fallen to a number two seed. So they've been up at the number one seed for a while. They got knocked off, and I'll tell you by who here in just a second. Loyola Chicago is up to an eight seed. Louisville is up to a seven seed. So that's another team that you normally think about, and they're a seven seed. Ohio State is up to a number one seed. So they just knocked Alabama down to a two seed. And just those words alone, Ohio State knocking Alabama down, that makes my heart happy. I like hearing that. I like saying that. But the funny thing here is you know, being the number one seed, as long as they beat the number 16 seed. Right now, the projected number 8 seed in that same bracket is Clemson. So, it's funny how things work out sometimes. Kansas, another blue blood, just talked about how they were unranked for the first time in 12 years. They have fallen down to a 6th seed. Xavier, for those of you in the Cincinnati area that follow Xavier, they've fallen to an 8 seed. Tennessee is a 4 seed. Stanford and UConn are in a play-in game for an 11 seed. North Carolina is a 10 seed. And who I do not see on this bracket anywhere is Duke or Kentucky. So no Duke, no Kentucky, and this is the 68. This is the one that gets all the teams in it. No Duke, no Kentucky. All right, if we go down to 48 teams, first team out, North Carolina. Last team in, Minnesota. So now not only is Duke and Kentucky out, but North Carolina's out. So these big name teams, these top teams, gone. Indiana would also be a first four out in a bracket of 48. As of right now, obviously things can change. But for the most part, everything else obviously is going to stay the same seeding wise. It's just, you know, your 11 through or your 13 through 16 seeds are now gone. And then a 16 team, West Virginia is the first team out. Oklahoma is the last team in. Also missing out, Kansas now out. Purdue, Wisconsin, Florida State, West Virginia out. Tennessee still in. Oklahoma still in. But obviously this is a very quick. So just because 16 is so few, here's what the bracket would look like. You have Gonzaga, Iowa. You have Texas, Alabama. Ohio State, Oklahoma. Virginia, Villanova. Baylor, USC. Missouri, Illinois. Michigan, Tennessee. And Texas Tech, Houston. So that would be your 16-team bracket as of right now. A lot of changes, a lot of uncertainty, obviously. Still a lot to come. You know, we're going to dive into college basketball more in the upcoming weeks as we get closer to conference tournament time, as we get closer to Selection Sunday. And, of course, once we get the brackets out, I will do an entire episode on the bracket. I might even do a reveal of what my bracket is, and we'll discuss different ways. So one thing I've really enjoyed doing over the years is finding different ways to predict a bracket. And so I might work on, you know, I might reveal some of that to you guys, and we can have some fun competitions in that. Obviously baseball season's coming. We are a week away, folks. So for those of you that love baseball like I do, you know, we missed out on it last year. We are 1 week away from pitchers and catchers reporting for spring training. So it looks like all things are rolling. I've been seeing pictures of the Reds rolling out and heading out to Goodyear, Arizona. So we are right in the thick of things. It is game time. It's go time. Let's do this. Let's have a good season. Let's have some good giveaways. Let's fill my wall with more bobbleheads. You know, and let's see what can happen this year in terms of Major League Baseball. Probably next episode, we'll dive into the NFL draft a little bit. Now that the order is 100%, we'll discuss mock drafts, we'll discuss potential trades and what draft day could really look like. So thank you again for listening. If you've tuned in for this whole thing, thank you so much. Check out my Instagram. It's Rounding Third Sports. So just like the title of this podcast, go to Instagram.com/Rounding Third Sports. And thanks again. We will see you guys next week, and we'll discuss more sports. Thanks for listening.